Welcome to episode 141 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live September 2nd, 2019. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In the Hurricane Dorian episode of this podcast, we spent some time talking about hurricanes and news around Hurricane Dorian, followed up with some Azure and Office 365 news. Hit the button. Go.
Well, that was anticlimactic. I was waiting for like a rocket ship taking off or something like that.
A rocket ship? How about a hurricane coming storming in on this hurricane edition of the podcast?
Yeah, we seem to have a couple of these every year. Turns out hurricanes are a thing.
Yes, and they are about as unpredictable as... I was going to come up with some cloud joke and I have nothing. Something's got to be unpredictable in the cloud as Hurricane Dorian seems to be.
Where your settings are going to be in Office 365 admin. How about that?
There you go. That's
a pretty unpredictable thing.
Yes. Always moving and changing locations, just like Dorian.
Yeah. So all sorts of fun times, hurricane blowing in. So that means for me, being out on the more the ocean side, I'm not as far inland as you are. I get to evacuate. Yay.
Yes. I'm pretty safe here. I emptied the back porch. I was going back and forth. I'm like, do I take all the pool stuff in? Do I leave it out? Do I take it in? Do I leave it out? And it's been so unpredictable. I caved and my garage is now jam-packed with everything that was out in the yard. It is a mess.
This is... Hurricane season is one of the few times a year that you can actually put a car in our garage. So we, you know, my wife and I are northerners, right?
Yeah.
I haven't quite picked up my southern drawl yet. And in the Northeast, or at least the Northeastern United States, when you have a house, you have this amazing thing underneath it called a basement.
Oh, it is marvelous.
Yeah, where you can just store all of your things. And then all of a sudden, you move south and you come to this place where it's all sand in your backyard and everything sinks and rusts and rots away. And they don't have magical basements. So I've come to the conclusion after talking to several neighbors and others down here from the Northeast that in Florida, our basement is our garage. Right? We don't have anything under the HOA that says we're not allowed, like, you know, we have to put our cars away at night. They can be in the driveway. So there's my basement. But there is this like 1 to 2 times a year where I need my basement so I can park my car in it like a garage. So that was Saturday's adventure, was getting ready for that. And then I'm still at home now, but they started evac for the part of Jacksonville that I'm in today. So we're in kind of a lower laying area, and then the part of town that we're in is only accessible by a few bridges. So if those bridges close down because of wind or, you know, they get damaged in some way and you haven't left kind of this the island part of Jacksonville, then you can't get out, which could be detrimental to emergency services. Like, we only have like 1 or 2 hospitals over here and they're all pretty far north. So we're going to go ahead and do the responsible thing and just hop out to the other side of the intercoastal, or as we lovingly refer to it on this side, we just call it going to the other side of the ditch.
You get to come to my side of the ditch.
Yep, that's the plan. You know, it's Monday afternoon now, and like I said, they started evac for everybody from St. Augustine all the way up to Jacksonville Beach this morning. So that all came through like 8 a.m. was kind of the official, hey, we'll start opening shelters and doing emergency services and things like that way. And so we'll go ahead and get out probably tonight or early tomorrow morning before they shut the bridges down, just to be on the other side. And then hopefully this thing, which is moving at a glacial pace.
Glacial might be, yeah, that might be overstating it. Last time glaciers probably move slower, but 1 mile per hour, I think, is what it's going right now.
You can basically, even when it's going its fastest, like as it was going across the Bahamas and, you know, they're just getting beat down, you can walk faster than it, right? I think it was going like 5 miles an hour or something equivalent to that. So my wife was showing me a picture before I walked in here. It's the hurricane track. So, you know, it shows you the cone of uncertainty quarantine, all those kinds of things. But rather than showing cities or like, hey, this is where it's going to be on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, those kinds of things, it said, you know, it's that same track hanging off the east coast of Florida. And then it said, you know, it'll be here by Thanksgiving. It'll be this far by Christmas. It'll be this far by St. Patrick's Day. Because it's just really kind of doing a crazy little dance down there as it just sits and doesn't move. So hopefully it can kind of figure out what it's doing and get off the Bahamas, and you know, people there can assess and figure out what needs to be done and start rebuilding and all that good kind of stuff. But yeah, hurricane life, always fun.
It is. I will say the memes for this hurricane have been absolutely epic because it has been so slow. Like, I can't even remember when we first started watching it. I bet it's going on a week now. And usually I feel like it's 4 or 5 days. And this one is just going so slow. Somebody compared it to, and it really does feel like, it feels like you're getting stalked by a turtle.
A little bit. I was teaching a class out in Redmond last week. So I was a little out of it. We're launching a brand new thing. And, you know, we're all kind of in our hole for 3 days, Tuesday through Thursday. And I happened to be out there with another gentleman who was attending the class. I was teaching it. He was attending. He lives down in Fort Lauderdale. And I got to lunch one day. He's like, so what do you hear about the hurricane thing? I'm like, hurricane? What are you talking about? There's a hurricane? You know, I'm just so far behind on the news. And then, you know, turning to, well, I guess I'm flying back Friday, so it should be okay. You know, I'll get in and we'll see where it goes and what happens. Always fun to be in this unpredictable time of the year.
Yes, that it is. So we shall see what recording is like for next week, but we are sneaking this one in right before the wind comes and we probably all lose power. Oh, so on that note, should we get into some news that's not hurricane related? Because that's all anybody around here talks about and has been talking about for the last week since this kind of first popped up on the radar, quite literally popped up on the radar. And
I suppose we can.
We could. There's been a few news things. I went through some of my notes and pulled some things out that I've seen. There were some Azure stuff, some Office 365 stuff. Everyone is always looking to save time in their day, just like moving to the cloud can save you from the mundane tasks of patching, updating, and maintaining servers. Sanebox can save you from the mundane and time-consuming task of managing your email. Sanebox works with your existing email configuration to make your mailbox awesome. It may be using Sane Black Hole to avoid mailing and cold sales emails, or Sane Reminders to automatically remind you when you need to follow up on an email. You can even snooze an email, yeah, just like that pesky alarm clock in the morning, to defer or to de-emphasize an email that doesn't need your immediate attention. So what are you waiting for? There's nothing to install, nothing to learn. Just go to sanebox.com/allthings. That's sanebox.com/allthings to get 2 weeks free and a $25 credit. Should we start with one that sort of interests both of us, and that is around Intune and iOS 13 and macOS.
Yeah.
We are both running these betas, I believe. I actually upgraded my macOS beta the other day too.
Oh, bad idea. It is horrible.
So it's been really good for me. I haven't had any issues with it since, I think I had some with developer beta 6. I'm on developer beta 7 now. And my keyboard is acting up.
Your Mac has issues like tying its shoes in the morning with a lot of the Microsoft previews you're running between OneDrive Defender and all the others. So I don't know that that was the smartest idea, but it is an idea.
Yeah. Can you see me messing up our Google Doc now, speaking of my computer messing up?
It's just randomly deleting things.
My browsers. Yeah.
Just fine.
Anyways, going back to what I was going to talk about, Intune will have day zero support for some of the new settings in iOS 13 and macOS Catalina or 10.15. So Microsoft has been preparing for the release of these OSs from Apple and preparing Intune to take advantage of some new device settings, make sure everything is compatible so that on day one, when everybody goes out and upgrades to iOS 13 and macOS Catalina, they are ready for it.
So there's a couple of things to watch out for with this one. A, we don't know, I think, what's going to drop for iOS and how Apple's going to play that. So there's multiple betas kicking out there for that operating system right now. So there was the 13 track. So we went up to 13.0 beta 8, I believe, on the developer side, and public beta 6 for regulars. And last week, they also, I think it was last week.
It was last week.
They dropped 13.1 beta. So who knows what the actual release is going to look like when it comes out, if 13 is going to come out because they needed to get that kind of pressed and ready to go for a GM so that they could start loading up phones, they could box them and then get them on boats to ship all over the world for iOS and iPhone release day. Or if they're just going to drop those phones out and day one, they're going to drop 13.1 regular and everybody will kind of iterate through very quickly and go from there. So who knows how that's going to go. So there might be some impacts there. I think one of the other things too was a lot of restrictions that used to be for unsupervised devices. So anything that's kind of classified as unsupervised in Intune, those are going to come over to just supervised devices, which could have some impact on the way you think about kind of bring your own device versus corporate owned device and the scenarios that are going to go along the way there. So think like a device restriction for using built-in apps like the camera or FaceTime. Those used to be available to unsupervised devices. Now those are going to be available only for supervised. So there could be some changes along the way there for you. And there's really nothing you can do to, like, it's going to supervised only. So if someone does happen to come up to the new OS and, you know, if they're running unsupervised now, they'll be okay. The restriction will still be there. But as soon as they do a restore or anything like that, they're going to go unsupervised and be off the beaten track.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of the new settings and updates are going to be going to supervised only. And I don't know, maybe that's something with the underlying iOS settings that's something they need to comply with Apple with.
They changed a bunch of stuff in there, right? They had that whole...
Yeah. Looking through this, most of the settings appear to be doing or going to, and new settings appear to be mostly all the supervised only.
Considerations there, depending on how you're doing it. And you're right, most of that's probably iOS driven, but you should still have to understand where that is going to take you along the way.
Right. Any changes you may have to make.
So if you're want to continue to use these settings forward and you're not doing automated device enrollment or anything like that, you might want to consider going down that path and looking, because, hey, you still have a couple weeks at least to pilot it before this whole sucker GAs and comes out the door.
Absolutely. So another Intune one, we'll just stay on the Intune topic for a little bit, is this was something we did talk about earlier, but it was the administrative templates. So think those ADMX for Windows 10, those type of templates for managing device settings, those actually have been GA'd now. So that was as of July 11. So it was a few weeks ago now. But those admin templates have all been GA'd. So in Intune, you can use those ADMX templates and start managing some of those other settings on Windows 10 devices. So these are things around formatting, data access across domains, deleting websites a user's visited from history. A lot of those registry type settings, again, that you would typically find in ADMX, are now being supported for being deployed through Azure AD. So we're getting closer and closer to having the ability to not necessarily have to have an on-prem domain controller, on-prem AD, to manage some of these settings on devices. So this is another one. If you are probably more smaller companies, cloud only, and you want to start managing some of those end user devices a little bit more, now that this is GA'd, definitely another one that's worth checking out from a device management perspective.
Yeah, down with Active Directory and some of the other constructs that come along with it.
Yes.
It's just a lot of overhead, and I think it does potentially slow you down. Like, if you have AD today and you are going to the cloud, what are you going to do with that thing? Do you bring it over to Azure? Certainly something like Azure Active Directory Domain Services isn't really much of an option for, oh, I don't know, just about anybody, or at least not the majority of customers that are out there today. It's got a bunch of limitations. It doesn't work the way we want it to anyway. So what do? Well, you go to this happy-go-lucky cloud-only future.
Yep. And to be clear, this isn't Intune, so you do have to have, I believe you do have to have all the EMS licensing because it is Intune. I don't think this is something you just get for free with normal Azure AD. It's going to be all the premium licenses, getting EMS, doing your Intune management, all of that. But I have been thinking about this week, going back to the hurricane, and some of my clients that have on-prem stuff yet, and all the emails and the activity, especially those that have data centers here in Jacksonville, which, I get it, if you're a company here, have a data center here, but from another perspective, why have a data center somewhere where hurricanes are susceptible to wipe it out? But how much nicer it is when you have all this stuff in Office 365 and you don't have to worry about failing data centers over or deploying resources to fail data centers over and all of that when it's all just sitting in the cloud.
So it's not a bad place to be. So there's a couple of things for this one. It is, as you mentioned, Windows only today. So you do have to be on specific versions of Windows. And really, it's targeted at Windows clients as well. So really not servers, but think client OS in your head. So you got to be on Windows 10, 1703, which was Redstone 2 or newer. Ideally, you would be on something like Windows 10 Enterprise 1903. So that was the H1 2019 release to go ahead and have that all come out. And then these settings themselves, it's a little bit weird. So you kind of mentioned ADMX and administrative templates. And I think it starts to blur the lines a little bit about kind of where these are and where they sit. These all rely on these things called Windows policy CSPs. So a policy CSP is a configuration service provider, which is built to enable, for the most part, enterprises specifically to configure policies directly within Windows 10. So depending on the service provider that you consume and kind of which policy CSP you have, then you can kind of go ahead and figure out from there which one you're going to hop into, because there's like hundreds of little individual policies and providers that are kind of out there that you can go ahead and consume from, right? Like, it's not just saying like, hey, I'm going to consume Internet Explorer. It's like, I'm going to consume Internet Explorer and then something like locking down my internet zone and my Java permissions and whatever that looks like for you, enabled, disabled, all the various policies that exist within there. So it can take you down a little bit of a rabbit hole if you're not into it already. And then the other thing I recommend is if you are going to run these with something that is not Windows Enterprise, take a look at the configuration service provider documentation. So all the policy CSP documentation, because you can hop into each individual policy and it will tell you which editions of Windows it applies to. Like, some of these do apply to Windows 10 Home. Some don't apply to Home. Just about everything I've seen out there does apply to Enterprise and things like that along the way. But if you're specifically targeting like education or business versus pro, things like that, you need to kind of hop in and figure out which settings are available where.
As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro. Yeah, lots of stuff to think about to go test, configure, take into account when you do these. It's not just going to be go click in, roll it out tomorrow.
Test? You would test these? I would just roll them out.
Microsoft will give you the warning. You can lock yourself out of your own Office 365 tenant.
Oh, stop it. This is just just an administrative template. It's not a conditional access policy. Totally different. I might lock myself out of my computer.
Around, that's true. But go clicking around in the wrong spot, you might end up doing it.
Well, you know.
You know, apply some admin template to your computer that actually triggers a conditional access policy that locks you out. How about that one?
Little baby steps. You know, maybe I'll enable passwordless or something first. Who knows?
I've been doing that one for a while. That one's solid. I even have my hardware key registered now.
Yeah, I'm in too many tenants and too many IDs to think about doing it.
Oh, but it's fun. Hey, look, it's raining and windy out.
Oh, it's bright and sunny by me.
I see leaves flying past my window. I don't even think these are the bands yet.
No. We're sitting at like 18 from the winds coming in northwest at about 18 miles an hour. So it's nothing yet. We got a ways to go until we get up to 70, 80 miles an hour.
These are just random Florida storms. Okay. Anyways.
Squirrel.
Oh, and here comes my family running in from the park. Okay. Back to updates and news. Which one? I'll let you pick one now. I picked those two. Pick one off our list.
Just one off the list. They tend to play around that Azure side of the house. So a couple quick ones for Azure LAN. If you are in EMEA, you have a new region that has come online or a set of regions for Switzerland. So, yay! A little bit more Azure compute available to you in that part of the world. So, Microsoft continues to kind of build out the regions. This will take it up to, I'm going to butcher the number. We were at like potentially 54 before, add a couple new ones, 56, say?
Sure.
Something like that. But some new level of compute along the way. So, those are out there kicking around and available now. And not just for Azure, they're also going to be offering tenancies for the rest of Microsoft SaaS platforms out of those regions as well, or kind of close to those regions. So things like Dynamics 365, Power Platform, Office 365, all that good kind of stuff. Those are all also going to come out of those regions as well, potentially helping a number of customers with not just their kind of public cloud or platform or infrastructure as a service data sovereignty needs when it comes to cloud computing, but also adhering to some of that for SaaS workloads they run up as well, which is nice to see. It's always fun when new stuff gets spun up and comes out because it gives us lots more options.
Exactly. So now I have Swiss data centers to go along with my Swiss bank accounts, right?
That's it. Well, you should start with the Swiss bank account and then get the Swiss data center.
All right. Perfect. Sounds good.
Not so much.
No, I don't have any Swiss bank accounts.
Well, you could.
That I'm going to tell anybody about.
Let's leave the IRS out of it.
Let's move on from here. Yeah. New topic.
So there was that one. There's also some networking changes that are kind of in process and have been happening for a while now. So for many, many things that we host in Azure, they'll typically be sitting behind a public IP address or a load balancer of some kind, whether it's Azure load balancer or maybe it's a PIP, that public IP that's hanging out on your firewall or an app gateway or your Barracuda, your NetScaler, whatever it happens to be that's kind of sitting out there ready to go. So a couple years ago, Microsoft announced that they were going to redo the way they do source network address translation port allocations. So when you are on that internal workload, internally Azure data center, and you go and talk out through your PIP to something else, like say you connect over to another provider, you know, maybe you're coming across back to your, to some presence that you have, but you're coming back across the internet because you don't have express route or things like that. All that SNAT kicks in and you all come out the same IP, but then you have dynamic port allocation that kicks into play. So you end up with all these ephemeral ports. So it's always kind of the source IP I came out of and then an ephemeral port to go ahead and identify back to an individual client that sits behind it. So the way they used to do a lot of this was kind of pre-allocating a set number of ephemeral ports that were available to you, maybe based on the instances that you're running behind it, kind of what was going on behind that pip and what was going to happen. So now what they're going to do is be smarter about that allocation. So, you know, maybe rather than giving you like a fixed size, your size of ephemeral ports can vary based on, say, the number of instances that you run in a backend pool on a load balancer and kind of dynamically allocate within there. So a couple of things will happen. You'll have like better pre-allocation because now they can burst through those ephemeral ports a little bit quicker. This allows them to do things like potentially having higher pre-allocation for you, which should cover most scenarios without you having to wait for like a scale event to kick in and potentially get you more ports. And then because now the behavior is pretty well documented, it should also give you far more predictable port allocation and downstream application behavior if you're relying on that today. So, you know, as I mentioned, some of this has been in place for a while. So there's kind of legacy port allocation, which was anything that was deployed before September 2017. And there are certainly customers that still have workloads that have been deployed before then and are still running today. And they really haven't had a reason to do anything with them. So for them, there could be a potential impact when this new model switches online, especially if you're using a whole lot of those SNAP ports, because they were all dynamically allocated to you. You might see a temporary drop or a blip in flows as everything's kind of dynamically reallocated and comes back into the new lines. So if that's a concern for you, what you can do is go and open a ticket with Microsoft support for load balancer and say, hey, this is something that concerns me. Could we not do it during the middle of the week on a Wednesday afternoon? Could we maybe do it on Saturday night at 2 a.m. my local time and have things run through that way?
Upsgility is disrupting cloud training as we know it with their on-demand platform, SkillMeUp. Their new design focuses on a user flow to better support role-based learning paths with these great new features. Real-time, hands-on labs are now included with each subscription to build your skills competence. Hundreds of cloud courses with more added daily to transform your skills for today's cloud-first careers. Role-based learning paths guide you through associated level courses in an easy-to-view layout and tracker. Microsoft Azure and Microsoft 365 certification prep courses and labs to support you leading up to exam day. Learn more and start your free 3-day trial at www.skillmeup.com.
Wow. That is a lot of information about those updates to Azure Load Balancers that I did not know until now.
It's all the stuff that you got to know about to keep yourself up and running in the cloud. Like I said, it won't affect most folks because it depends on what you do and kind of what your workload is and how it looks. But if you're into that whole servers as inanimate objects, like servers as cattle kind of thing, and you're constantly refreshing and bringing new workloads in, you're already kind of sort of in this new model and you're okay. It's really for those customers who are potentially in the older model. So anything that was deployed September 2017 or earlier, you may see some blips depending on how you've configured kind of partner firewalls and things like that. But the upside is once you're through this, you're in the new model, everything's very well documented now, which is a nice change.
Very nice. So there was another announcement that I saw around Azure that was a little interesting. I don't know how many of our listeners this will actually apply to, but it was this Azure Security Lab announcement. And this is, they make it very clear in the blog post that this is just for researchers, but this is essentially a dedicated cloud host for security researchers to test attacks against different IaaS scenarios. So they took an Azure environment, isolated this Azure environment off from all the other customers, made it a nice secure testing spot, and spun up this Azure Security Lab program that you can go set up an account in, set up your test account in, get started with. And then it does sound like it's only reserved, or you can only use it if you are certain registered researchers to test different vulnerabilities. It's all tied into different scenario challenges. Some bounties here too if you find some flaws, but kind of trying to help give researchers an area to look for different security vulnerabilities, test them out without potentially impacting or exposing customer data.
Yeah, so some of this is probably born out of the availability of those new dedicated hosts. So you, outside of just research in general, you do have the ability in certain regions to say, hey, I would like to kind of be as close to the metal as I can be. Now that there's that segmentation and segregation within the data centers, it's a nice way to kind of lift out and put things to the side. So like you said, you do need to be a registered researcher for this one to go ahead and potentially kick the tires on it. They also, when you register, will prioritize certain products over others. So things like Azure Active Directory are pretty important, IoT Hub, Web Apps, Key Vault, any kind of the shell services like Cloud Shell, both Bash, PowerShell. You know, if you can find escalations in there or kind of breakouts in there, then they would very much like to know that and potentially pay you for it. And then, you know, if you're doing Azure stuff, you might want to get involved in other bounty programs as well. So Dynamics 365, Identity, DevOps, every single one of those kind of has their own little thing along the way. This does not mean that you can just as a regular customer go out and hack. So, you know, you still need to make sure that you're paying attention and following Microsoft's kind of engagement rules for things like port scans, fuzzing, anything like that along the way. You might want to still be opening up support tickets and getting that information into the right folks so you're not just getting your tenants shut off for no reason.
Exactly. And you can make a fair amount of money. If you're really good, you could make a living off of this bounty program.
Yeah.
There's some decent penguins in here. I'm going to say it's probably not very easy to actually find something considering the size and scale and scope of Microsoft's internal security team. But if you do manage to find something or can find stuff, you can get paid pretty well.
If you can find something, but this one's not for... Well, it's at least not for me, not for mere mortals. Yeah. It is certainly for security researchers and things like that. So do keep that in mind.
Yes, not something I will be diving into myself either. All right, do you want to pick off one more? Should we call that a day so we can go, I would say prepare for hurricanes, but it's just going to be sitting here and watching the weather.
That's for you. I still got to pack. I got some more furniture to bring inside and I got to fill up my basement still. So working on it slowly but surely. And then I think my neighbor, he just did his yard last week. So he put new sod down. So he's got all the pallets in his yard. I might just have to like go over there and take all those pallets and be passive aggressive and like throw them down in front of his garage and say like, hey, you know, you got to take these in. Like, we can't have projectiles running around at 70, 80 mile an hour winds, whatever the heck we're supposed to get here.
He's just waiting for the hurricane to take care of those pallets for him. Just hopefully not into the window of your house.
Yeah, that's fine if he drops them off in your neighborhood. But being that they're like right in between our two houses, that's not my ideal scenario.
Yes. Speaking of projectiles, last tidbit for anybody still listening. I was driving down 295 the other day. And it just kind of struck me as funny. The construction crews, so they're working on a bunch of highways around here. And naturally, there's a bunch of porta-johns or porta-potties, whatever you want to call them, out along the highway for the construction workers to use if they have to go to the bathroom. They took all of those and were strapping them to the front of the machines. So like taking giant truck straps and strapping all of these to the front of the front loaders and bulldozers and all of that to make sure that toilets did not go flying down the highway in the hurricane.
Yeah, sure.
Things you don't think about when there's no hurricanes around is all of this stuff that can start flying around in massive winds.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what it's like over at my parents' house. So that they're in kind of brand new units. So, you know, everything was just built within the last couple months, but they're on one of those places where the street isn't finished yet because they're still building the houses at the end of the street. So there's lots of in process kind of things going on there. So I firmly expect, you know, when I go over there, I'm gonna have to leave my car outside. So it'll probably end up with like a 2x4 or something through the windshield, but I've always wanted a new windshield. So let's do it.
Or just go buy a bunch of wood and build a garage around your car. At your parents' house.
You've seen my car. It's not worth it.
No, probably not. 2x4s or the wood to build the garage is probably more expensive than replacing the car.
Absolutely. There you go.
Not to be mean to your car, but
that's going to be my son's car someday. I just got to make it another 4 years.
You just got to keep it going long enough. All right. Well, I will let you go prepare for the hurricane. I'm going to go get some work done, or at least try. And we will talk to you again next week. Stay safe during the hurricane and talk to you later.
All right, bud. Sounds good. Thanks.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.